This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson.
And joining me are Darius Thomas.
One day we will all be rich.
And Brock Rahm.
They're playing a different game than us. That's all I gotta say. It's just a different game.
Matt Lang is joining us today to talk about his journey from Ruston, Louisiana to becoming a full-time freelancer. You've seen his work as a graphic designer, but that's not how it started. He's seen it all after getting out of sports, re-entering, and breaking out on his own. And he has stories for it all.
All right. So you guys on time that is?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
That's class.
Awesome. Let's go with 26.
26. Like it.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
No worries. It's a totally useless thing we do every episode for Sync that like is not necessary at all. But we still keep doing it because there's a running joke in the intro.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
All right, welcome back to the Creative Sports Podcast. We have a great guest on today. Stays low-key, but his work doesn't. We have Matt Lang, the owner of Matt Lang LLC. Welcome to the show, Matt.
What's up? How are you guys?
Great. How are you?
Super. Super duper. Glad to be here.
Well, many people know of you from the college sports space, mainly football. Yep. At your previous stops. I'll allow you to give us a little background of your career and how you got to the point where you are today.
The short part, most recently, for the last 5 years, I was the creative director for the Texas Longhorns football program. Three seasons prior to that, same role for Alabama football. And the two seasons prior to that, I was a graphic designer for the Atlanta Falcons.
You're a big LaTeX guy from Louisiana. How did you get into graphic design and creative services?
I was a graphic design major in college. Just went to school. I actually started school as a marketing major. I was a marketing major for 3 years. I found that to be very boring. I didn't like business school at all. I actually started failing out of college at one point. I needed to change my major. A friend of mine at the time said I should try graphic design. I had no idea what it was. And it was, I mean, dating myself, probably 2001. And she said, you know, all those CDs that you buy, you know, the covers that you're always talking about, somebody has to make those. It's a graphic designer. Oh, okay. And so I did it, you know, pretty much a 4.0 from that point on. I didn't realize before that you can have jobs and classes like where you do things with your hands and, you know, get to be creative. So I just thought that was cool. I did not go to school for it to start, but I wound up finishing with it.
And how did you land your first gig? What was your first college sports gig after finishing college?
Actually, I started in college sports immediately. When I graduated, I had plans to take a break, just kind of, you know, see what happened. I mean, you're in college for 4 or 5 years and you get tired. I went to stay at a friend's house in Hawaii for a few weeks, and I was on the couch one day, and I had a student worker job my senior year as a coach's video student, which I'm sure everybody's sort of familiar with. So that was my student job. So yeah, I graduated, go to Hawaii. I'm there. My boss at Louisiana Tech calls and says, "Hey, I'm leaving. Do you want my job?" So yeah, I mean, I flew back to Louisiana Baton Rouge. Then the next day drove up to Ruston. It was a 4-hour drive and interviewed with the head coach. Got the job, had really no idea what I was doing. Started basically the next week. 22 years old, head video coordinator of a D1 college football program. We had, you know, no servers back then. It was like four VCRs and a computer and like two projectors, and I had to figure it out. So I did that for 2 years. Never got a raise, never got any kind of equipment budget or anything like that. So I was, you know, I made, here's one for everybody. I made $21,000 was my salary. And so, I mean, salary on paper before taxes, like that was my salary.
With benefits?
But that, yeah. And retirement too. So I don't even know what that check was by the time I got it.
For those wondering at home, that's just over like $10 an hour. If you break it out to 40-hour work weeks.
Yeah. I don't, are we taking out, do we count the hours I slept on the floor of the office, which is often?
So now we're down to $6 an hour.
I mean, man, my wife at the time, or my wife now, my girlfriend at the time, she was up there with me, just watching tapes copy real time on a TV to make copies for the, this sounds like ancient times now. I mean, it really wasn't that long ago. But yeah, so I slept on the floor, you know, made the highlight video, did the cut ups. I had a, you know, student crew. It was cool, man. I really liked that job. Like it didn't pay much and I worked a lot, but I still think that was one of my favorite jobs, was that Louisiana Tech job. I was actually the head strength coach at Louisiana Tech at the time was Yancey McKnight, who was the head strength coach at Texas. And that was his first head job as well. So we both started together, reunited at Texas, 15 years later, you know, that 15 years, that's how long I've been in 20, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, that job was great. Didn't pay anything. So I had to get out of it. So let's put a timestamp on this. I'm going to say 2004, the 2004-05 seasons I worked there. Didn't get paid anything, needed to, you know, survive. It wasn't so much I hated the job, it was just I just need money. And so I left and I went and I made car commercials in Monroe, Louisiana for, I don't know, a little bit over a year. Then got a job in New Orleans doing casino marketing for that. I mean, that job, I commuted from Baton Rouge to New Orleans back and forth every day. And if nobody knows that commute, that's about an hour 45 to and an hour 45 back. So that lasted not very long, maybe 6 months. And then I got a job at a software company doing all this was video too. Like I was a video guy to start. I went from graphic design to a video job. Went to the software company. I was doing video. 2 years there, got a job at an agency that did, it was cool to me because they did SEC stuff. And as an LSU fan, I was like, we get to do some LSU things, but they wanted design work. So I'm like years out, super rusty. That job didn't work, unfortunately. Go back to the software job. This is real exciting stuff, man. And everybody's on the edge of their seat with this just super energetic jobs I had. Then we went back. We moved back to Ruston. I got married. We moved back to Ruston. I got a job at a creative agency up there. And going back to the question, that was my first time in sports design. So I got a job at this agency and they were doing all of the Louisiana Tech stuff. Because, you know, they had a contract with them. And I think the first thing I did was a poster. The schedule poster is big back then, media guides, all that stuff. Like the women's soccer team at Tech, I think I did their poster. I know I did softball. But I was there to do video, but I remember designing those posters and I was like, man, that's really cool. I really enjoyed doing that. So this is 2010. So yeah, that whole span that I finally got 2010, I did some sports design work. And then Old Hat Creative was really big at the time. They were doing like everybody's schedule posters, everybody's season ticket design, everybody's you know, program covers, media guy covers, intro videos for their video boards. That was always huge. And they had an awesome squad over there. And one day, the four of us from our tiny agency took a field trip to Old Hat Creative in Norman. And we walked in, and I mean, at that time, I don't know how many employees they had. It had to be 20, 25 people in this building, and they're all doing sports creative. So, I mean, if you can think to now, no big deal, right? I mean, you can go to any college program and see 20 people in a room, no problem. But then to walk in and see people doing like the Florida State schedule poster, I remember was like the thing. What are they going to do this year with the Florida State schedule poster? They just went all out on that thing. To walk in this building and there it is on somebody's screen and that person's doing it, and they were doing like, oh god, who are they doing? It was like all the big teams. And it was them and I think this company called Row 27 was doing some video work, and they Row 27 had all like the 3D animation stuff. And that was it. There was two companies, and my mind was blown. I was like, I want to do that. And so we drove back that day, and it was like, how can we get into this sports design thing? Humboldt College was somebody we got. Yancey got us a project with Iowa State. He was the strength coach at Iowa State at the time. We did them. Stony Brook College, little bitty stuff. And of course, Louisiana Tech. Fast forward a few months later, the job, I got let go. And I never was told why. But I got let go. So I had pretty much no money. I'm in Ruston, Louisiana. My wife's teaching art at the middle school, which doesn't really pay anything. There are two agencies in town. I applied for a job at the other one. They had an opening. I applied and they were like, oh, well, we don't really like that company and you work there, so we can't hire you. I was okay. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I really had no choice. I mean, Ruston is 35 miles from Monroe, Louisiana. It's an hour from Shreveport, and there's nothing in between. And again, this is 2011 now. It's January 2011. So I got to figure it out. And I was like, you know, I really liked that sports stuff. I want to do that. People were customizing the NCAA covers that year. That was when that was like a really big thing. NCAA football custom covers, and you can go to the forums and everybody had it. So I did it and I had a little part-time job at a screen print company. And then I would go home and I did a little bit of work for LaTeX, like whatever that other company didn't do, I would pick that up. Louisiana College was one. They paid me in cash, which was super cool. I remember I was at dinner in Ruston and the dude drove from Pineville, Louisiana and delivered me, because I joked with him and he actually did it. He delivered me a brown paper bag with $1 bills and rubber bands to the parking lot. It was my Facebook memory, maybe today, which is ironically, I'm in there at a free Wheezy t-shirt on and I'm holding this stack of dollar bills with a brown paper bag money, man. So that felt like a real hustler that day. And like Pepperdine, what was the dude's name? Jamil Macias or something like that. I can't think of his name. That guy's listening. That guy kept me paying rent. There was a girl. She was at Wake Forest. I wish I could remember. Katie something. I wish I could remember their names. I would shout them out so hard right now because they found me and they paid me $250 per schedule poster. And so I thought I was making big loot and they kept my rent paid. And it was awesome. I only had to sell like half my memorabilia collection that year to buy my wife Christmas presents. It was awesome. I had a little bit of money. I was doing some design work. My portfolio was going a little bit. Behance, I think, had just started. So I had a little Behance going. And I had a sideline pass. So I could take photos at the Louisiana Tech football and basketball games. Somehow finessed my way a media pass. To shoot LSU football. I actually shot Saban's my first college football game was Saban's return to Baton Rouge with Bama. So, you know, no big deal, right? Don't screw that up. So I shot that game. I got a little photo portfolio going. So I'm doing some design work. I'm doing some, you know, some photo work. And then as fate would have it, man, this is a long-winded story. I'm sorry. but so Christmas Eve, 2011 in New Orleans, I got to shoot the Falcons Saints game. I don't know if it was Monday night or what. It was a big time, prime time game. It was a game where Breeze broke Marino's passing record. And at that game, I'm not even going to go back to the story. I met this guy, Scott Kelby. You guys may know him, Photoshop guy, along the way. So I go to the game. Scott's there. Mike Benford, the creative director of the Falcons, is there. He makes intros. You know, I'm shooting for somebody else. So I meet Mike and I'm walking off and I'm like, hey, man, I'm totally on my own. I'm just trying to like get it. But if you need anything, let me know. I'm down to do like whatever. Right. And so he started following me on, I guess Twitter. It was really like Twitter and Facebook at the time. Right. Like IG was still just cell phone pics only. And I forgot, like he would message me from time to time. How do you get your pictures to look like the way you do in the Superdome? I have trouble with lighting. And, you know, we talk back and forth. And then I don't remember how it got to the point, but I remember being in my house one day and I got a Facebook message from Mike. And again, broke Ruston, Louisiana, in a wood frame house, which is no longer there because if anybody knows, they had a tornado a couple years ago that went through, blew that house away because I lived right by the baseball field. So the house is gone. But in that house, I got a Facebook message that said, would you want to work for the Atlanta Falcons? And I mean, like, so this whole story that's long-winded, you know, these jobs I had after tech sucked. I hated these jobs, right? They suck. Now, wearing khakis to a software company, casino marketing, I don't even gamble, man. Like, I don't want to do this stuff. And it's like putting Wayne Newton inside of a template 100 times. Car commercials. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody. I'm not talking about like the Acura National ads. It was Hickson Ford. Shout out Hickson Ford, North Louisiana, Dallas Hickson and those guys. No. And then everything else. And so to get that message, I thought it was fake. And he was like, no, you know, I know I need a designer. You also do photography, I think. And he was talking about how, you know, he's a big photography guy. And I was like, I mean, of course, like, yeah, I want to. Yeah. What? And so my wife came home and I think the interaction was something like she came in the door and I said, hey, what do you think about moving to Atlanta to work for the Falcons? And she said, no. And I said, OK. Hey, we're going to move to Atlanta and I'm going to go work for the Falcons. Like, you know, because at the time I was like, I'd go work in Cleveland or whatever, like not to knock Cleveland, but I mean, I'm from Louisiana. Cleveland might as well be Mars to me. I was like, this is the shot. And so, you know, we talked about it and we did it. And we were like, we're going to go to Atlanta for 2 or 3 years and we're going to move back to Ruston, Louisiana, and we're going to have all this experience and we're going to go solo again. And that was the plan. And we never went back. I think I've been back like once to visit. I walked through the tech offices with like all my national championship stuff on from Bama, like big ring on. Thought I was a man. But yeah, so then, yeah, so that got me to Atlanta. And I mean, I guess the rest is history. It was the beginning of sports creative as you guys know it now. I remember being there. We had Morgan Andrew, who is now Morgan Alverson. She's still in Georgia, but she was the Facebook manager. That was it, Facebook. And, you know, Jay Adams ran Twitter and the website. And I mean, that was as social media as it was at the time. And I remember just being like, man, we pay somebody to be on Facebook all day. This is crazy. You know, and then obviously it's exploded. I remember going to, so I did that for 2 years, really cool. But then I go to Alabama and it was recruiting design, and they had a guy before me, Buddy Overstreet. If anybody knows Buddy Overstreet, he like he's the first person that I ever remember doing creative for college football. Like I would see his Alabama, he had like the game day promos, like victory posters, and then like some other stuff in there. I'm like, this stuff's cool, man. And so like when I didn't even know he left. I just like got there by chance. And but like getting there, and I said, what do you guys do? Like, when I interviewed, I was like, what do you guys want to do with this spot? And they're like, just make cool stuff. What? Okay. You know, and in the NFL, it's all marketing and you have like directives and sponsors and things like that. And they just said, make cool stuff. I'm like, I'm in. College football fan, Alabama, you know. I met Saban like 4 months after I got hired. You know, he's in his room. But, you know, 2 years in Atlanta, then I got to Alabama, and we were, it was primitive or early, man. It was me. Sammy Silverman was at Ohio State. Aaron Bills was at Michigan. He might have been a little bit after me. Still there, hanging on. I love that. And then, shoot, man, I don't know. Like, it might have been a year and a half later that, like, Clemson came on the scene. And, you know, then that was just an avalanche after that. And that's how we kind of got where we are now. But yeah, I've been around this thing since before, you know, before anybody was doing it, literally before anybody did this, I was in sports. So what was the time? Is it podcast over now? Did we run out of time?
No, that was good. I think what you highlighted there is a lot of people's journeys aren't like totally linear, right? Like, it's not like here's this one thing, right? Like I can remember, you know, freelancing and shooting videos for car companies too, right? Like in the car dealerships, right? I think a common thing that's a negative in other industries but is a positive here, and you highlighted in your story there, is people outside of this industry tend to look down on a jack of all trades, right? Master of none. I hate that phrase, right? Where I feel like in this industry you can be a jack of all trades and master of one, right? You are a master, you know, designer, right? That is your bread and butter. But you're a good photographer and you're a good videographer, right? How do those all play together and play into your design? And how do you hand off skills between all three of those different disciplines?
I would actually say I'm a better photographer than I am designer. I just don't get to do it more now. I've been taking photos since I was like 7. I mean, you give me a flashlight, I can do a studio shoot. How does it all play in? I think, you know, with design, you want to use the best photos, and I don't know how to say how it works together, but I mean, it just gives you a sense of hierarchy scale, like what your subject mood, you know, mood, you have different moods of photos and you know which ones to pick out or why there's a certain intensity going on, so they can translate to some graphics and things like that. Photo and video, you know, it's kind of the same thought process, framing, following the story, telling the story. You know, motion graphics are, you know, that's graphic design. You're just making it go. But I mean, knowing how to do all those things, I think helped, because as I went through, you know, it was me at Alabama, and then it was myself and Tony Turnquist at Alabama, right? And then so now I've got to be able to coach him. He was fresh from Minnesota, so he's doing design work while I'm doing video work, and so now we're a team, and I'm coaching him up because he's just getting started. Our student worker at Alabama was Micaiah Smith, who, if you guys know, was at South Carolina for a while. He's with CAA now, super talented video guy, and so we're coaching kind of him at the same time, and so to be able to understand how each one of these mediums works, you know, it like, I remember when I was doing those car ads, we had this boss, I had this boss, his name was Lee Fletcher. He passed away. He's an awesome guy, but man, he couldn't get out of his own way. And he would just come in and he'd go, Maddie, just make it, do the ghost effect and walk out. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Do the ghost thing, make it, do that thing that you do, you know, and we've all had those bosses. And you know, I honestly had a few of those at Texas, like just, I mean, even recently, they don't know how to communicate what they're actually looking for. And so being able to do all those things, I could communicate to my team, how, instead of just saying do that thing, right, it was, okay, well, what if we, you know, is it, what if we're doing this and your frame rate's off, or we slow this down and we can do like a speed ramp here, you know, we can cut back and forth from these different angles, or just like, you know, whatever it was, but without sounding like an idiot, that's just like, do the thing, right? Or in design work, like when I'm working with Tony, trying to teach him, or like Callie Andrew, who just was at Alabama, like she was a student there, and she'd come by and hang out with us, and being able to help teach Photoshop in a way that, you know, makes sense, like an actual teacher. So, you know, having all these skills, one, yeah, I mean, and it gets you further in your career. I mean, it makes more sense when you're a director and you know how to do multiple things, I think. But like, yeah, it helps in your career, but it helps you talk and teach and communicate with your team, with people that you're trying to explain why things work or why you can't do something. If you can't do it, well, why? You know, like, you need to be able to say why in a way that sounds, you know, educated and professional. Like, you can't do it because XYZ, but because of those XYZs, maybe we can do it this way because of, you know, ABC, right? So yeah,
you kind of touched on the art direction with feedback and how that's difficult for some people to provide that feedback. Ultimately, it sounds like the way that you approach it is that you are trying to give room or leave room for somebody to interpret that and take it also in the direction that, you know, since they're working on it, that they feel works, where you're not giving like prescriptive feedback almost. Can you talk a little bit about how you approach feedback and how you help someone like a Callie or a Micaiah or someone that you're trying to help, how you would approach feedback back to them?
Oh yeah, that's easy. So it's funny you mentioned Callie. So Callie interviewed me for a project, and she asked me what my, I don't remember if it was my favorite moment or my favorite project, or what I was most, the project I was most proud of. And I said, it's not a project. The thing I was most proud of in my entire career were the students and interns and employees that we had that went on to get careers and be successful. And I never, when I was doing feedback, would say, that sucks, start over, dude, this is, you know, no, yeah, I don't, you know, like, never harsh. It was always a teaching moment. And I don't know if it was like the art school in me or what. I do also go back when I was trying to start in this, was that era of like, no one would help anybody. It was like jobs were scarce, and it was like, I'm not telling you how I did that Photoshop effect. I'm not telling you what my camera was set to, because if you do it, you're going to get a job that I can't get, which is nuts. So I'm like an information fountain. So whenever, and it's, I try to be constructive as much as I could, but I remember when Paige Vinicom was another one. She's at the Chargers now. Like, there's a lot of people that we worked with that went on to do some really cool stuff, but I would always be, this isn't working, and why? Or, hey, what if we tried it this way? Or, this is taking a really long time, what if we tried something different? You know, it was, you know, like Paige, one of the most ambitious people I think I've ever worked with. I mean, she, instead of going like 1, 2, 3 to 10, would go 1, 10, I want to do 10. And it was like, you don't know how to do 2 through 9, but I never would immediately stop her. I liked that. Like, it was hard. There was obviously stressful times, but it was like, she wants to know this stuff, and that's awesome. And there was like never really complaining about anything. It was just wanted to get there. So it was like, go, you know, go. And maybe we'll figure it out along the way. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but it was like, she was learning. I was helping teach her, and everybody that came through, I at least tried to be as constructive as I could with that. Because I mean, everybody under you is trying to get to some kind of director spot or some new job or something that pays more or whatever. And if you just walk in and go, that's stupid, start over, or you're just going to do these things and just demand, like no one's growing and they're just going to leave just because they hate it. And it's going to be lateral movement. And, you know, you don't want anybody to do lateral movement. You want to see everybody succeed, you know? So that's kind of how we looked at it.
So Matt, you spent a lot of time, you know, with Falcons, Alabama and Texas, but now in the last year, you've decided to kind of go back to what you used to do on that journey. And it all kind of comes full circle to now be full time on your own, designing what you want, when you want, kind of thing. Kind of talk about life in the last year as a full time freelancer or company owner per se.
Yeah. And I'll be upfront. I didn't leave Texas because I didn't like Texas. I left sports because my son had just turned 8. You know, I started Texas when he was 3, maybe between 3 and 4. I don't think he was quite 4 yet. My daughter was 1. She's 6 now. And I missed everything with her. And so, you know, that was the 90% of the reason I left was like, man, I'm missing this and I'm tired. And if I don't stop this now, I'm going to miss everything. So I did. And that little taste of being on my own in like 2011, I really liked it because you're kind of in charge of your own destiny, right? Like you can handpick work or you can take everything as it comes, and it's hard, but it's rewarding, and you can kind of do what you want and you can work hours you want. And, you know, there's challenges in that as well. And so I always kind of wanted to give it a shot again. Yeah, I had 10 years of team space under my belt. So I just kind of wanted to see what it could be. I knew I didn't want to go work for a team again. I knew I wanted to make up a lot of time at home. So this was kind of the natural look. And so I had, you know, I had, you know, credit to my wife. We have a lot of money, a lot of money. We had a lot of money saved up, in my opinion. And by a lot, I mean, we had enough to where I think she said that I left December 15th. And if I never put a penny in our personal account, I can make it to December 1st of this year before the savings ran out. That's obviously a very dumb thing to try to do, but we had that saved up. And so it was like, okay, now's the time I can do this and not have to worry about it too much. So yeah, I wanted to just be home. I am now. I got to, you know, not talk about work. I got to be around take my daughter to her gymnastics meets now. I was an assistant coach for I was at all my son's little league games for the first time ever. All the practice for the first time ever. I mean, I would get video clips at work of like, hey, you know, Judson did whatever at the baseball game today. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm watching it through like a chain link fence on an iPhone. No, so many people in this industry know exactly what that's like, but like, you can only do it so many times where it's like, shit, man, I gotta be there. And so, you know, I was an assistant coach on his all-star team. I got this insane idea. I'm going to be the head coach of his first ever kid pitch team, which if you guys have experienced Little League baseball, that's a crazy world of its own when they're like 8 and parents and coaches and like this kid plays here and these coaches and select team. I'm learning as I go. That's my cool. Like I sit here all day and I work and then I go do that thing. That's my new thing that I do outside of the house is go help my son play baseball. And I'm assistant coach. And I'm like a coach now. He has a basketball game tomorrow and I get to be on the bench and that's pretty fun. But yeah. And then the work is interesting. You know, you work in a certain space for a certain amount of time and it's really all you know. And when I left, I was getting emails from companies, teams in different leagues, teams at different levels, people, all this stuff, barbecue restaurants, like things I never would have thought about being able to do are all out there now, man. And I talked to like, I don't know, I'm not going to say his name. I don't know if he said he's going solo yet, but I was talking to a guy at a place in the college sports arena And he was on the fence about going solo. And I was like, man, look, everybody told me for years, you need to go. There's money out here. There's more work than you can even imagine. Darius, you were one of them. And I didn't listen. I held on to it for a little while. And now I'm the one saying that because, I mean, it's true. There's so much work to go around. And I mean, for the first 3 months, I struggled. I took learning how to do a business, one, which is hard. And then I said yes to everything. And so, I mean, I was killing myself just trying to like figure out, you know, this project needs to be done here and this, and like managing time. And I just want to chill with my kids. And I kind of want to play PlayStation. I haven't done that in about 8 years. That might be kind of fun, you know, just all this stuff. And so that was a real challenge at the beginning, was running a business, being a self-manager, balancing family life, and then getting the projects done at a high level on time. I mean, you got that much going on. I mean, it's easy looking back at Texas. You just are like, okay, it's watch list day. It's, you know, media day. It's this, it's that, you know, okay, now we're doing the season look and feel. And this is like, I'm going from like USC football to Rutgers to Ottawa Red Blacks to Pinkerton's barbecue to answering emails. I'm doing like my brain's in like 20 different places at once, which, like I said, every freelancer knows. New to me though, you know, so that was hard for a while, but I'm good now, man. I'm rolling. I'm doing okay.
I think one thing we talked about in our last episode, I guess I don't know when these are going to air. It's the last interview we did. But we talked about
the next episode
or the next episode. Who knows? That's part of the fun. We talked about how a lot of times there's a sports discount, right? Where there's the mentality from teams and colleges that, hey, it's cool to work here. You should like not get paid as much as your peers across other industries because it's sports. Mm-hmm. It's cool. Do you see a seismic shift happening where people are finally saying, no, I can go do this on my own and make more and still be involved in sports? And then do you see the industry responding to that in any other way, or do you still see them trying to just churn and burn young 20-year-olds until they can't do it anymore?
Yes, people are leaving. No, I don't see the industry changing. Yes, I think the industry will have to change sooner than later because they're not going to have anybody. You know, I get, you guys probably get them. I get DMs all the time. Hey, we need a person for this role. It's a director spot. Okay, cool. What are you paying? 50. What is it over? All sports. Oh, what? You know, like you're starting to see the six-figure jobs pop up a little bit. You know, I'm lucky. I was blessed. I made six figures at Texas, right? But at school like Texas should be paying that. We can all probably count on like two hands of people in college football that are making six figures, right? And the demand is just off the charts. You know, I think more people should, honestly, if you're not happy and you need to, you're talented, you're not happy, and you have a network, should go solo. You should go make the money that you can make. It is cool to work for a team, and teams know that, and that's what sucks. But like, it was cool working at Texas. It was really cool working at Texas. I really was proud to work there. The brand is so massive, and it was awesome that I got to work there. Alabama was cool because, yeah, it was Alabama. We lost 4 games in 3 years, and we won a national championship. We played in 2. I got amazing memories, but like Texas was a next level, like respectable, in my opinion, brand. It was Bama close, but Texas was there. And then NFL is cool, yeah. But like at some point, you know, if you're never home or you're not making enough money, or you're doing the work of 4 people and you're getting paid the half a person's salary. Like I was guilty of this too. I mean, in Atlanta for sure. It was like, you got to go eat in Louisiana Tech. I mean, we talked about it in this podcast, $21,000, right? I mean, I did it for 2 years. That's crazy. Like McDonald's employees now are making $5 more than that an hour to flip burgers. And shout out McDonald's. I did it in high school for 2 years and that job was sick. And I have amazing memories from it. So that's not a knock. It's just like, what? And so little schools are paying that kind of stuff right now. you know, all the little sports are trying to get that are trying to get their own creatives that don't have the budget. I understand that they want creatives on their staff. I get that. And you should. And you should want every team, if they want it, should be able to have somebody and go, this is our message, this is our look, and not have to like fight to get a graphic done from a bigger creative staff or anything like that. If the athletic creative staff isn't large, right? Like if it's big enough, then okay, that you're good. But I mean, if there's one dude doing everything for the athletic department, you know, it does suck for like the women's basketball program to have to wait on content to go out. Like everybody should be equal. You know, I get that football steers the ship, right? And you know, men's basketball steers the ship, and that's yeah, but every sport needs creative. But on the flip side, you don't have to work for the brand to do work for the brand, right? Like it was cool to work at Texas, and I realized when I left, I was like, oh shit, I don't have to be at Texas to make Texas stuff. If I do good stuff, then I can go on my own and sit here and make a Texas thing, and then it's out there. Texas fans get excited about it. My portfolio looks great, and I didn't have to drive 30 miles to my office to do it on 35 in the morning, you know? Like, so, I mean, there's no easy solution to the whole deal, but I just, you know, you don't have to work for the team to do work for a team. There's work out there. I found it out. If you want to work for the team and you don't mind making a lot of money, then great, go do that. I kind of get frustrated when I see people who are stuck because they have stuck themselves. Like, go, you know, I see you on Twitter and you're mad about it, and I would be too, but like, leave. I know that's a simple thing to say, but like, just, you know, or if you want to leave, decide in August, if you're a football staffer, decide in August, this is my last season. Take that time to find a new job, make connections, build a network. Enjoy every moment of your last season, because you don't want to look back and go, man, I just left and I wish I had soaked it in. Like, soak it in, but then bounce, you know, don't make yourself miserable because you think you have to, because you do not have to.
I think you just touched on something super interesting there too about networking, right? I feel like someone like you was out there sharing content and trying to put yourself out there, and before you needed to, because if it gets to the point where, hey, you realize, hey, I need this, and then you start doing that, you're already behind the eight ball. So how would you tell people to not necessarily like be all about yourself and promote yourself, but like how can you become more known and network better to set yourself up so that it's less risky to go out on your own?
I think just do, if you're working for a brand, leverage the brand. Michael Huff told me that like my first week at Texas. He said, leverage this place for everything that you can. And it took a long time for that to sink in, like maybe 4 years and like going into my fifth year, because I decided during COVID, like I'm out after two more seasons. So I knew, you know, promote your work. Just like, I think a lot of my stuff, and I might eat these words, but I think a lot of the stuff I posted was more like, kind of like today, like Bijan Robinson, Doak Walker watch list. And I'll just put it out, you know, the horns emoji or whatever. And so, hey, look at this graphic I made of today, and I worked 3 hours on it. Like, it was never really that, I don't think. But I just wanted to promote Texas. It was never promoting Texas for a long time to make myself springboard. I was proud of the work that we did. And I, you know, an intern, Lauren St. Paul, she can vouch for this. Like, it was never about me at Texas. Darius, I don't know if you ever noticed this, but like when people would come up to me on the sidelines and go, Matt, and this is weird at Texas, I guess, because it's such a rabid fan base. I'm sure that all the Blue Bloods creators probably get this. It's like, Matt, hey, love your work or whatever. And I'm like, oh, Derek made that, you know, and this is Lauren and she runs our TikTok. Like, it was quick to deflect or whatever. But I mean, you know, leverage a brand. I told all the interns that, I tell everybody that, like, your work is work. You know, it is what it is. You're good at it, you're bad at it. You're a designer, you're a videographer, whatever. But like, your network is everything. So, you know, in your brand are all the business owners that follow that team, all the alumni that follow the team, current players that play for that team, everybody who worked there while you worked there, all of that is your network, right? So, you know, just be really cool to everybody. Help people when they ask you. You know, I have a real dry sense of humor. I'm sarcastic. Darius knows that. But like, ultimately, I was always there to, what can I do for you? I will help you. I will give you whatever you need. And I will give you my time no matter what. Almost no questions asked, right? I'm sure I probably resisted if it was like a stressful day. But like, that reciprocates back to you. And so when I left, I mean, it's probably, I don't think that's why, but like, doing all those things, promoting the team on social media, promoting the interns, this, that, retweets, whatever it is. Like, the day that I said I was leaving was crazy Niagara Falls of like DMs. Like, it was nuts. And I think anybody who leaves, if you're promoting yourself in a, you know, pretty positive way on social media, and you're promoting the team you work for, when you leave, your peers at other schools, of course, will retweet that stuff. But like, everybody who liked your work probably knew that you were busy while you worked there. And then, I mean, countless DMs I got, hey, man, I saw you left. I didn't want to blow you up while you were there, but now that you got some free time, I got this logo I need done. I've got, my buddy needs this. I own a construction company. I mean, like 18-wheeler stuff I was getting like crazy. Because people are fans of the team that you work for, and they love the things that you make for that team. And so they'll call you whenever you leave, because you're like an athlete to them. Like, every creative listening to this, as wild as that is, fans of a team are fans of you, because you make the cool things that they click on, and you entertain them, and they know who you are. I promise that they do.
Talk about some of your biggest influences and inspirations, as whether it's from graphic design or video production, like, what do you draw some of your influences and inspirations from?
Instagram, everybody who's younger than me. I know I've got, I'm looking at it right here on the screen. I've got a saved list of just graphics and stuff. There's a lot of, I get inspired every day by new people. I don't know if I have, I mean, I guess I do. Like, I know I mentioned Sammy earlier, and we talk all the time. I was talking to Sammy today because we're both trading card nerds. And so we were talking about that stuff. But like, Sammy, I always thought is like next level talented. And so, you know, shout out Sammy. Tyson Beck from like forever, you know, he and I had like a 3-hour FaceTime during COVID, which, you know, was super cool. Just to chop it up with him. And we've known each other through social since his Posterizes day. So, I mean, that was like 2013, I guess. So I don't know. It's everybody who I know and I talk to, all the creatives, like, I admire their work. I just don't want to tell them to their face because, you know, whatever. But, you know, like, just if you're making cool stuff, I try to see it. And I try to pull from it all the time. I'm like, there was this interview once where 50 Cent was talking about Eminem, and he called him the rapper's rapper. And he said he knows about everybody, keeps up with everybody. And that always stuck out to me, because I always felt that way about creatives in general. Like, I'm a little bit more vocal now on Twitter than I used to be, because I have to be. But like, I see everything. I keep up with everything. When COVID, like, everybody, COVID year was the year that everybody's like, oh, these new designers are just throwing out graphics and, you know, they're not, no design rules. And da, 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 da. I actually really liked all that stuff, man. I found a lot of really, really good graphics. And I made some friends with some people during that time, like Porter Gray, his name. Man, I'm blanking on dude's name from Canada right now. He did like 365 project, and then during COVID, and it led to doing some golf work. What is shoot, I wish I could think of his name right now. There's a dude in Australia that was killing it. And I really wish I could get their names off the top of my head so I could, you know, give them a shout out. But like, they're like 19 years old, man. Like, I'm inspired by you, you know, like that kind of stuff. It's day by day. I find new people. Dude that just got hired at USC football, you know, they hired him when my retainer was ending. He came from Oklahoma State, super talented designer. Like, I got like six of his things saved right here in my Instagram deal. Chris Liskowitz said, I'm just scrolling now at CAA because he designs in a different way. Like, I can do this all day of people's work that I just like. And so to me, you know, that's always that's the inspiration right there. There's not really anybody that like is one above. Jimmy at the Bulls, you know, kills it.
When you're looking through some of that work for inspiration, how do you take what they do or use that inspiration in your own work?
Yeah, it can be anything from I'm flipping through here and I click on this and it's like C.E. Jimenez is, you know, he does the shoe composites that look like they're in real space. So it can be anything from something like that, right? And so he did a design for Hat Club one time, and I was like, oh, I bought that same hat. I want to composite a Rangers hat that looks like it's kind of in the desert. So it can be anything from kind of what kind of design I want to do to how, as I'm scrolling through, again, I'm looking at it, how their hierarchy of typography is, right? I'm not copying what their text is, but maybe it's the way they stack text. Maybe it's the where the text placement is compared to the subject of it that like, oh, I mean, no brainer. It's not something revolutionary, but I'm just not in that mindset right now that triggered it. You know, like Tyson Beck's old stuff is right here, like from, you know, 2016, 17, and he was doing the crazy super sharpening filters on like James Harden. Like, I don't know. It's just pulling out a piece that might trigger something. I want to use a diagonal colored background versus something that's realistic. And so it's never really like, I want to copy that. It's just, okay, how did they do that? There's a super grainy, but really saturated, sharp color on top of that shape. That would look cool on top of what I'm already doing. Or they're doing abstract shapes. I never thought to do abstract shapes. So like, today when I did yesterday when I did the Bijan Maxwell Award watch list, like I felt like doing abstract shapes on there. That's not really in my wheelhouse. I don't normally do that. I'm normally really clean. So maybe it just challenging me to do something else. So I don't know. It can be anything from lighting effects to textures to type to, you know, elements used or something like that. It can literally be anything. My brain is all over the place. So it's never just like, oh, I look for it for this. It's, I have thousands of things saved and I just scroll until my eye catches something and then I'm stuck with it.
Yeah, I love that. The way to approach it and the not stealing, like directly, like copying it one-to-one.
I tell people, you know, that are learning, I say, go find people you like, find the designs you like and copy those things. And then you put them side by side. And if they don't look the same, then you don't know how to do it still. Then I say, don't post those things because you're copying them. But if you're trying to get to a certain level, for sure, copy those people. Because if you're like if I'm clicking on this one right here, I don't know how to pronounce that name. I don't know. This Rams, I'm looking at the Rams. If I really like what the Rams are doing and I don't know how, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to look at it and I'm going to go, okay, they use like a quarter of the screen for their information panel. It's a full photo and I'll keep looking at it. But I mean, I'm not going to make it look exactly like that because, you know, that person came up with that. But it is going to teach my brain to think, if I divide my artboard up into, you know, X amount of columns, X amount of rows, if I now know that the player name can take up this much space with the information below and the imagery can work, what if I flipped it? What if I did it on top? Now I have all these pieces that I can work with because I've taught my brain something new about how the information and the graphics can work together. And that's, I mean, it's infinite, man. Like, it can be anything, but blending modes or whatever. But yeah, it's don't copy identically though, but just try to teach your brain how to think the way that these people do. There's a reason why you like their stuff, you know? So go learn it as best you can on your own, or ask, right? You'd be surprised how many people will just tell you how they did something.
You've been somebody who's been around the industry long enough to see seismic shifts, right? From like tape to nonlinear digital editing and servers and investments, and then in that technology, and then social media, and now NIL. What has that shift been like to an NIL space, and how has that affected your work, especially as a freelancer now?
Still learning. I think everybody's still kind of learning what that is. I'm working with Bijan Robinson right now, and that's kind of, that's a pretty fluid, you know, situation too. Have some cool things coming up that I really can't talk about yet, but like, it's an interesting role because I worked with B at Texas, and it was, you know, he was the player and we got along, we were friends, and we'd make the content and give it to him or whatever. And when I left, his aunt and his financial advisor called and they said, hey, would you want to be Bijan's creative director? And yeah, duh, the answer is yes, of course, right? I mean, just phenomenal athlete, one of the most amazing people I've ever met, just a super, super nice guy. But I had no idea what that would be. And so for me, working with him, it's, I will go with him to certain things and document him visiting places or take photos of him. You know, it's no secret, he has the Lamborghini deal. And so I was there when he went to pick up his car and I took photos of him there. And then those are the photos that were distributed out to, you know, the media and things like that. So the one of him sitting in the, you know, the Lambo with his, the door open or whatever, like, yeah, I took that photo. It's really, for me with him, is meant, it's more of a quality control type scenario, it seems like, right? So he has a deal. Okay, what is, they want something and how does that look? And so we'll meet and we'll talk about it. And then there's other conversations we have too about this, like, social media practices and things that way. Or he has a photo that, you know, somebody wants to use. And there's a lot of somebodies and some things I can say, so I'm just going to keep it like that, that somebody wants to use in a thing, but maybe the angle is wrong. And so, you know, they'll ask and, hey, can you retake a photo? Right. And so, or if you want to review these air quotes things that this guy, again, this company made, right. It's a lot of not very, specific things, but you know, what are your thoughts? And so that's just kind of how I've been involved with him. He's the only one. I don't know of a lot of athletes really working with creatives as like on payroll. Like, I'm on retainer with him. Like, I get paid monthly for him to be in this position, and it's cool, right? Like, and I am indebted to them because when I started out, they were the first one to call. And so I would love to see more athletes do it and not just be like, hey, I'm going to have a party, come, you know, I'll pay you to come shoot my party or whatever. Like, I want to see athletes get a deal with, I don't know, Yeti, right? I got a deal with Yeti. I want to shoot some Yeti promo stuff. Darius, I want you to come shoot it. And also, while we're at it, like, I want you to shoot everything else we got. Now, anytime I have some creative stuff, I'm going to come to you. You're my guy. You know, I'm going to go to the draft and you're coming too. If we need a photo guy, I trust you to, you know, find it. And yeah, whatever you say, like, I believe in you and, you know, I'm going to take care of you. You take care of me. And that's how it could be. I mean, musicians and pro athletes and all these people have it. And so it'd be really cool to see premier athletes really do that. I think it would probably help their social. I mean, we all know, we see these guys never post anything on social, so it'd be really cool to start to see these social platforms for these guys really take off, you know, with content made by content creators, not just you know, cell phones and things like that. So I don't know. I think it's wide open, man. And it's taken off a little bit slower than I thought. But I guess the landscape kind of keeps changing with this NIL and what people are deals they're getting and collectives that are popping up and things like that. I think I saw today where Penn State started a players union. So, you know, who knows? Breaking news. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask you about not Penn State, but just moving forward. Do you think that would you love to see? I mean, you kind of answered that, but how could that kind of change go where these athletes, because the way that it stands is the schools can help, but in a limited capacity, but, you know, and some student athletes can get representation or whatever, but those firms may or may not have, you know, especially with them getting a growing number of athletes, and some of them have pro athletes and college athletes. So the time dedicated, is that something that you would love to see just so that these athletes can get the best product and kind of create an avenue? Because now you have hundreds of people who've, you know, in the last 2 years who've left the industry.
Yes, for teams. Of course, man. Yeah. I mean, it would be like we talked about earlier, the people that are kind of, they feel like they're kind of stuck, right? And they, I mean, if whether it's the agency or the athlete or people kind of nudging going, hey, this would be a smart idea for you to do to really embrace your brand and start presenting yourself as a brand, opens the door wide up for content creators or whoever, you know, to go work with an athlete. Or maybe you work with an athlete, then you start working with two or three athletes, right? And the next thing you know, you have to start a company with it's you and, you know, three other people, because now you represent all these athletes. And then, oh, hey, the athletes have a brand, or they're affiliated with, I don't know, Russell Athletic. And then Russell likes your stuff and they go, hey, we really like that. We need a commercial done. And so I think that the possibilities are really endless. Again, if your network is strong and you're doing good work and you treat people the right way, like, it just takes one. And I really wish, and I don't mean I wish that people would wake up. I wish out loud that this would happen, is that more athletes would think that way, to where the opportunities for these creatives who know the space can make a pivot and their work-life balance gets better. Maybe they get paid a little bit better. They get to flex a little creative muscle, you know, and then, you know, whatever the athletes are doing is obviously a variety of work. So now your portfolio is changing and evolving constantly. It could be really cool. I hope it happens. I really do. I mean, pro athletes are doing it. It's just a matter of time before the college athletes do it.
Well, Bijan is certainly on the at the forefront, you know, by getting you, and love to see that. We talked about the work, and you kind of talked about the family. Just talk about how excited you are to be able to spend more time with the family and see your wife every day before midnight.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. You know, my wife's a teacher, so they're all home now, and so they've been home all summer. And you know, since this won't air today, it's not really giving much away, but like my kid's really getting into baseball cards now. And I was working yesterday morning, he was like right here behind me on the floor trying to sort stuff out. And then at one point I was like, you know, screw it. And I just shut it down, and it was like 10:30. And we just sorted out cards, and he's asking me, you know, is this guy good? Is this guy bad? And I'm like, no, this card's trash. This is the one you want. And, you know, just kind of all day, which really set me behind on work. But to be able to do that, is there's really no like value that you can put on that. And that's going back to what I was saying. Like, I missed out on all that stuff, and I'm playing catch up now. It wasn't like, I'm not a bad dad. I just wasn't home. Like, I literally was at work, you know? And the crazy, like, we don't have this life if I don't work that life. Like, it's a trade-off, right? And so, like, we'd be fine. We'd just be, I don't know where we'd be if I didn't do this. Probably we might still be in Atlanta. I don't know. But which, shout out Atlanta. I love Atlanta. It's one of my favorite places. But like, to be able to do that, and we did that all day. Then at 4:30, we went to my daughter's gymnastics meet, came home, had dinner together. 6:45, we're at basketball practice, you know, with him till 7:30. After that, us and another family, the guy I'm coaching with and his kids, we all go to this place. We had this outdoor playground. We're chilling, drinking milkshakes till 9:30 at night, right? And I don't have to worry at all about anybody texting me, nobody calling me. I don't get texts after five from a client unless they're just like calling me to kick it, which is crazy because like now the clients are cool and they say please and thank you. And that like I work with Anchor Bat Company, right? They care more about my son and how he's doing and his baseball than I do. And they'll text me like, you know, how's Justin doing in baseball and all this stuff. And it's not because like he's on the verge of going to minor league baseball or anything. He's eight, right? So, I mean, it's just you develop these relationships, but I don't get any emails on the weekend. I don't get any texts. Nobody's asking for anything. I do have to do, today is Friday, I have to do a last second graphic for Monday for SMU. It's all good though, because like they've been so awesome up to this. I don't mind doing that for them. The San Francisco Giants, I was doing their all-star deal. They had a pitcher that got made it to the all-star game last second. I'm in Florida. I'm on the beach. I get a text. For the last 4 years, if that had happened, I'd have lost my mind. I'd like thrown my phone out into the ocean and freaked out. Right. But yeah, cool. I got it. No problem. When do you need it? Oh, you need it in 30 minutes. Hey, I'm gonna go run up and make this thing for the Giants real quick. It's all good. And I did it. I didn't ask him for any more money, nothing. I mean, and I tweeted about that. I said, if a client is good to you, I'll go above and beyond, no extra charge to do it, because they were my first major league client. They let me kind of be as creative as I want, which I wish I'd have done more. I kind of got my own head on it. They were super cool the whole way, and they needed something, and they were relying on me to do it. And so, like, sure, I got you. No big deal. Right. So the clients are, the client work is awesome. The client relationships are awesome, but being at home it's great. Like me and my son, again, the trading card thing is cool. The sports are cool. I'm teaching him how to barbecue. You know, he thinks that's awesome. My daughter and I watch cartoons and stuff together, and she's like a crazy good artist. And so, you know, she'll draw and I'll kind of talk to her about that. You know, and her gymnastics and all that kind of stuff. So I think she wants to play softball, which I don't think is going to be a good idea. She cries a lot. But you know, we'll see, but I don't know. I'll get to be there for it. So it's awesome.
Yeah. Talk about what's next and kind of how people, clients, teams, individuals, athletes, whoever's interested, artists can, reach out, find your work and all that.
I don't know what's next. You know, I'm on retainer as of today with Miami football, Miami Hurricanes, SMU. I got a proposal out with another college to do theirs is more athletic branding. I'm doing recruiting stuff for the other two, which surprisingly, I don't mind at all now. Maybe it's a setting. Like I do not mind doing, if you're listening and you're a college football program, I do not mind doing your recruiting work anymore. I will do it all at a high level. But moving forward, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of crazy. Like every week it's a different email. It's a different call, something new. I'm just going to keep riding this until I can't anymore. Or, you know, if a company calls and the offer is good, I'm open for it. Right. So I'm not going to say no to anything like that. I'm down to listen to anything anybody wants to talk about, because, you know, nothing's cemented. And, as far as people finding me, I don't know, Twitter, Instagram, email, however you're finding me now, just keep finding me.
Shout out your platforms. What's your Twitter and Instagram?
Matt J. Lange. MattJLange on both, mattlange.com on the World Wide Web. And then my email is matt@langecreative, langecreative.net, not.com.net. And yeah, Google me, baby. You can find me anywhere else.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking out some time to visit with us, tell your story, share, you know, what's been going on with you. I know you got a huge fan base and followers, and you're one of the respected ones in the industry. So very proud of you and the work that you've done and what you're doing and everything to come.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys asking me. I, like I said, I normally don't do these things, and I don't know. I was in a good mood, so I appreciate it. This was fun. Hopefully somebody gets something out of it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.